The following program is brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
When we live providently, we can provide for ourselves and our families, and also follow the Savior's example to serve and bless others.
From the beginning, the Church has taught that families, to the extent they can, need to assume responsibility for their own temporal welfare.
It will take all of us working together to successfully apply the principles of welfare and self-reliance.
Where there is an open heart and a willing mind, there is a path to healing. These are the words that you will hear from Martha Bray, board-certified holistic family nurse practitioner, and her team at the Advanced Health Clinic in Farmington, Utah. Martha, you've brought some of your team with you to the studio today to discuss living a healthy life. Welcome to all of you to Provident Living.
Thank you.
Let's make some introductions as we begin. In addition to Martha, we have Dr. Joshua Christensen. He's a doctor of chiropractic. Glad to have you here with us, Dr. Christensen.
Thank you.
We have Louise Jorgensen. She's a licensed professional counselor and a doctoral candidate in counseling.
It's good to be here.
Glad to have you here with us, Louise. And we also have Kay Smith, who's a licensed clinical social worker. Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's dive into the questions, and we may find some rather interesting things as we discuss a healthy lifestyle or healthy living. First of all, Dr. Christensen, you had some thoughts as we were beginning to talk about a holistic view of medicine. Would you like to share those?
Yeah, I think it's important from the outset that when we talk about health care, we first off realize that at least in the United States, that what we call our healthcare system is really not designed to promote health. It's really a disease treatment system. In other words, what the vast majority of people in our country are used to is that you wait to have a problem, you develop some sort of disease or sickness, and then you go to a doctor that then manages that disease or sickness for you. And when we talk about healthy living and provident living, we want to try and have people adopt lifestyle habits that will promote health so that they truly are healthy and don't have these diseases and problems in the first place. And so we're going to talk about a holistic model for achieving overall health, and health being optimal function physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, that will prevent diseases, help people to feel good, live to their potential, which is a lot different than, again, waiting to get a problem and then deciding what the best treatment for that problem is.
I appreciate that introduction. You know, this came about because of my initial interactions with you, Martha, and a family medical experience that we needed help with. As Dr. Christensen or Josh has mentioned, this idea of, I think, taking control of one's health. That's what Provident Living is about, whether it's in the field of finances or emergency care or, in this case, in a person's health. How does a person take control of their health, if you will? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, number one, the very first thing that you have to think about is that you are in control of your health and that it's your responsibility. And, you know, it used to be, you know, in my parents' era, when they went to the doctor would tell them, da-da-da-da-da, you need to do this. And they would not question it. They would not think twice about it. They just do whatever. And they essentially gave all of the responsibility to the doctor. And the truth is, responsibility for your health lies with you and is your responsibility. It's your health. It's your body. So that, to me, is the very first most important thing that you have to look at.
Now I'm going to shift to two of our other guests that have to do with social, mental, emotional. The notion of taking control or taking responsibility for one's physical health is certainly evident. How about our two other guests, Kay and Louise, the idea of taking control of one's mental or social, emotional health? Could you respond to that?
It's interesting because if you think about this in terms of us as individuals, we have – the scriptures are clear. Lehi talks about the concept of acting or being acted upon. And a lot of emotional health can be narrowed down even to those two concepts. People that act take accountability. They don't allow themselves to be placed, or they don't. They stay out of what would be classified as a victim role.
Okay.
And they take responsibility for their thinking, and they take responsibility for improving. They're proactive. In other words, they act towards improving relationships. So that's part of it. The other part for me, and perhaps for all of us, is that there is a strong connection between our emotions and the way we think and our sense of spirituality and our physical health. About two-thirds of the medical schools in the country in the last 30 years have developed mind, body, and spirituality departments for that very reason, because there's such a connection between those.
So they're recognizing more of the whole person and the whole health idea too.
Yes.
Okay, I'd be interested in your take on that as well.
Well, I agree with what Louise has said. When I started my training, I was really worried about mental health. You know, there's a stigma there. And I was at BYU, and I just decided I would take the gospel as my guide. And it's been a good thing, because I look for techniques and therapies that are consistent with gospel principles, particularly things like gratitude, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that, the effect on the mind and the body with just gratitude, but also truth, living in reality, and agency. You know, feeling acted or acted upon. Those are basic principles to the gospel and to mental health.
You know, as I reflect on what we talked about before we formally began the interview, each one of you talking about the whole man, the whole person, the entire being, that's really important when one thinks about taking control of our lives or taking responsibility, or how do we live more providently as the church has spent so much time and effort on. I think we've already answered the question of why should we be so concerned about our health. You've given some great responses already. How would you define good health? And let's just go through, starting with you, Josh, and then we'll just work our way around. If you were to give a definition of good health, what might that be?
Well, I think it's optimal function physically, well-being mentally, emotionally, socially, and not merely the absence of disease. In more practical terms, I just think of it as you can do the things you want to do and you feel good.
Good. Thank you. Louise, what are you thinking?
Balance.
Good.
And balancing all of those aspects of life that you have talked about, not just emphasizing the physical or the emotional, but creating a balance. And that's often hard to find, but it certainly is a good goal.
Something we should be striving for, certainly. Martha, what's your thinking on that?
In addition to that, I think about health. Good health is being equated with happiness. So if your body's happy, you're happy. If you feel good emotionally, you're happy. Everything, you know, and so when you're happy, like Josh said, that you can do the things that you want to do when you want to do them, and you don't have to revolve your life around, well, how do I feel today? You know, can I do this? Can I do that? Can I, you know, am I able to walk here? Am I able to go there?
Is it too simplistic to say, is the glass half full or the glass half empty kind of
approach?
Well,
I do think that your attitude and how you see life has a huge impact on that. So your attitude and how you know, if you're happy in the things that you do, and you, like Kay was saying, if you're full of gratitude, that creates a happy feeling in yourself and in your entire body.
Kay, good health, what does it mean to you?
Well, I'm going to follow up on what Martha said. There is a lot of research that indicates that what we pay attention to, there is all kinds of stuff bubbling up in our psyche all the time. Something we heard, something somebody said, something on the radio, some past experience. And we are all the time choosing what we are paying attention to. And that makes all of the difference. It makes all the difference in terms of what kinds of neurotransmitters or neuropeptides that are released in our body that creates our feeling states. It determines the blood flow patterns in our brains, the length of the brain waves. It determines everything. It's amazing.
Some great counsel. Thank you already. You know, as we talk about one of the things that everyone experiences, that's stress. And I'm pretty sure that each of you can share some counsel, give some counsel about how stress can lead to sickness or disease, whether it be physical or mental or emotional. Let's start with you, Martha. Can you address the idea of stress in our life?
Stress is the number one impact in our lives. We require a certain amount of stress, which helps us grow and develop, because if we didn't have any stress, we would do nothing. We wouldn't get out of bed. We would nothing. So a certain level of stress is very important, very helpful. But if you have too much stress, you come into a state of dis-ease, and the body comes, or the mind comes into a state of dis-ease, and then that's at the state where you start to have symptoms. And it's interesting because 80 to 90% of all office visits to doctors are stress-related.
How many?
80 to 90%.
Oh, my word.
So stress is huge, and it's so important how we manage it and what we do with it.
Okay. Your thoughts on that? Relates to one's well-being,
yes,
and health.
Yes, absolutely. When Martha was talking, I was thinking, and I guess going back to what Louise said, too, about opposition in all things. There will be opposition in all things, and we're here in a mortal state. But again, it's how we choose to address those, what we choose to attend to, particularly looking for the Lord's hand in all things, which I think has been addressed a lot recently by the general authorities. Watch for his hand. And that gives you confidence that he's there, he's aware of your situation, and it changes everything. If you know the Lord's aware of your situation and you can see his hand, even in difficult times, it absolutely changes your whole perspective and changes the neurotransmitters, neuropeptides, blood flow patterns, all of the above.
Now, Josh, I've read that movement can greatly relieve stress. Is that true? Is that a wise tale? What?
No, that is true. There are studies that show that exercise is as effective at combating depression as taking an antidepressant drug. We are designed to move. And in fact, our brain is kept healthy by the input to it. And there's nothing that stimulates our brain more than movement. And so as we move, it stimulates our brain. We feel good. Obviously, our muscles work better. Our heart works better. Our blood vessels are healthier. And we feel better physically and emotionally, which is a great combatant to stress.
There was a soundbite earlier in the week that just reminded me of some recent study had been done that, and I don't know what the earlier referent was, but human beings used to walk on average 15,000 steps per day, and now we walk on average 2,000 steps per day. I imagine that comes into play with what you're saying, perhaps increased stress in society.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could I speak to that?
Certainly.
In regards to what Martha Kay and Josh have already talked about, if you think about what happens if you don't move, your muscles don't get stronger. So Martha's right. A little stress, some stress, is significant because it helps us to become resilient.
But how does that non-movement, forgive me for interrupting, affect us emotionally or mentally? Or does it?
The non-movement?
Yeah.
Our ability to become resilient and to learn coping mechanisms, which is this really important part of being able to live and face life's challenges, only happens when we come up against stress. But our body is not meant to live in long-term stress. And so it's learning to cope with that stress and not always have it that's helpful, or learning how to deal with it. And that's why movement is so important. A study was done at Harvard University, a longitudinal study over the last several years. The lead scientist was Dr. John Roddy. And they discovered that a chemical, BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, is produced when we move. And that creates, and Martha can perhaps speak to this better than I, but creates a chemistry in the body which insulates the brain to create more resilience, to fight against the aging process, and to assist the entire body and nervous system to calm and feel better. And That chemical is produced when we move, when we exercise. Dr. Roddy, speaking to what Josh talked about, said that 30 to 45 minutes of moderate exercise per day can produce enough BDNF to produce the same effect as a mild or moderate antidepressant. So it's very helpful, not just for eliminating stress, but for well-being as well, mental and emotional well-being.
Thank you.
Yeah, they've done lots and lots of studies on that, proven thousands of times that exercise is probably the biggest key, one of the biggest keys to health. When we are stressed, we produce a lot of stress hormones. And when we exercise, those hormones are released out of our body. If they're allowed to stay in our body, stress hormones break down our system, break down the tissues. So you get the increase of BDNF, and you also get the release of stress hormones. It's absolutely the number one key, one of the number one keys to very fun health.
Fun health. I like the sound of that. That's good.
That's good.
You know, you were talking about preventative ways like exercise. Are there other preventative means to contribute to a healthy lifestyle, food, drink, whatever we take into our bodies? Could you all speak to that?
Oh, yes.
We'll start with you, Martha, since you're nodding right now.
What we take into our bodies, you know, that's the raw materials that our body has to work with. All the time when I was going to nursing school, I would ask about, well, you know, what about our diets and what about food? And they'd say, oh, well, that doesn't matter very much. That doesn't matter very much. But it's completely illogical to think that doesn't matter very much, because we are what we eat. And, you know, the church has been, they've tried, you know, through the Word of Wisdom to help guide people a little bit.
You're listening to Provident Living on the Mormon Channel from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our guests today are Martha Bray, Dr. Josh Christensen, Louise Jorgensen, and Kay Smith, all health professionals with Advanced Health Clinic in Farmington, Utah. Every one of you nodded when I said food, so let's just go around the table and have everyone respond to that.
I try to tell my clients to treat your body like a Ferrari, not like a jalopy.
Yes, I want a Ferrari. That's great.
Depends on what you put in. You're not going to put water or Coke in your gasoline tank.
It's true. That you're right. The other thing that I notice is that people do better. A lot of times emotional stress is converted to physical pain, and that's something that we address in the counseling room. And people do better if they drink enough water, if they're hydrated. It's extremely important for physical and mental health.
I'm already calling myself to repentance on a couple of these things, just so you know. Josh, your thoughts on that?
Yes, this is something that I stress with my patients, and that healthy eating is certainly part of a healthy lifestyle. And so the major diseases that we have in our country, and I'm going to pick the top four: heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, and having a stroke. There was a study that showed that those diseases can be decreased by 78%. This was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine in 2009 by doing four simple lifestyle things. And those four things were: don't smoke, don't be overweight, eat a healthy diet, which is rich in fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and a little bit of meat, which is exactly what the Word of Wisdom teaches. And then the fourth one was to exercise. In this study, they wanted people to move 3.5 hours a week. And so doing those four things would decrease these four diseases by 78%, which is a huge, huge number.
78. I want to make sure. 78% decrease.
78%. Yeah, that's a huge deal.
Well, if you look at diabetes, type 2 diabetes, type 2 diabetes can be completely reversed. You can not have diabetes anymore by exercising and eating the right foods.
And prevented in the first place.
And prevented, of course.
Right. And again, that's the key when we talk about provident living, is trying to prevent these problems. If people can adopt these healthy lifestyles to begin with, they can avoid these problems.
So a person that has, well, we've mentioned diabetes, but it could be any one of these. Can the disease they have be moderated if they're already diagnosed with it? or are they stuck with it?
Well, that's a good question. There's always a potential for healing. As long as someone's alive, there's always a potential for healing. There is a point, Val, there's going to be some people that are too close to the edge of the cliff where, okay. I mean, if you've got heart disease and cancer and you're waiting until the very end, yeah, it might be too late. You might still die. But yeah, for most people, certainly it will be modified and lots of times can be reversed, and especially in the cases of type 2 diabetes and heart disease, absolutely can be reversed. And so it goes back to the idea of taking charge for your health, because there's no government program or insurance policy or drug that can make up for sitting on your couch and eating junk food for 60 years. It's just impossible. And so if people can understand these concepts and employ them at an early age, again, they can prevent these problems in the first place. But yes, if you do have those diseases and start to adopt a healthy lifestyle, obviously things are going to be much better. But the real cure is prevention.
But I think it's important to realize that I don't care what age you are or when you're starting, you can always improve your health. Anytime, any age. I mean, they've taken 90-year-old people in rest homes and did little, you know, exercises, lifting weights, minimal, and they increased their muscle mass. And they were able to improve their diets and get off some of their medications. You can improve your life at any age, no matter where you are.
Start where you are.
Start where you are and move, yeah.
Okay, you've been quiet just a little too long here. What's your take on this?
Well, I'm going to kind of go back to what Louise was saying, particularly about hydration.
Okay.
Is the neurotransmitters, the connections that are happening in your brain, need that water. They need the water. They need that fluid to move in. And so hydration is very, very important for mental health, and also avoiding sugar. A lot of people, without even realizing it, they're self-medicating with sugar.
Any sugar? Or what are we talking? Any sweetener? What do you classify as that?
Well, sugar.
Sugar.
I don't know the research on the sugar alternatives, but I'm talking about sugar.
Okay. All right.
You know? And it will create spikes. So you're feeling depressed, you're feeling anxious, you take a little sugar. Goes right to your brain. The problem is 30 minutes later, you're going to dive.
So the idea of a sugar high is very real.
Yeah. You really don't want to go to sugar when you're feeling stressed or depressed.
Well, and you have to realize, too, that all your simple carbohydrates are sugar.
They're converted to sugar. Yeah. So
and
anything
they respond
white,
the exact
flour,
same yeah. way.
Yeah. You've got to be really careful that you're not self-medicating with sugars, because you're going to have that crash. It's not going to sustain your body the way that healthy nutrition would, especially your B vitamins with your whole grains. That's the way to go.
Okay, so let's flip the coin. We've talked a bit about taking physical things into our bodies, food, water, whatever kinds of things. What about relationships? And how do relationships impact our overall health and well-being? Okay, let's start with you then.
Me.
You bet.
Well, I'm going to refer to the work of Dr. Daniel Siegel, and he has done wonderful work if people want to look up the things that he's done. But one of the things that he discovered early on is the gaze, about a 10-inch gaze between a mother and an infant. That loving gaze is hugely important. It stimulates a part of the brain called the prefrontal orbital cortex, and that in turn strengthens the corpus callosum that connects the two hemispheres of the brain. It's hugely important in social development. But the good thing is that it can continue throughout the life cycle. In other words, if there's a loving gaze between a parent and child or between marital partners at any time, it still stimulates that part of your brain. And it, what they found is, like with criminals, when they do autopsies, that corpus callosum is very weak. Like it somehow, if that doesn't develop, people don't develop social awareness. The awareness of living in society and keeping rules, keeping commandments. And so just that one thing is hugely important. And, of course, there's lots of other things, so I'll defer to my colleagues.
Okay, next colleague. Josh, what are your thoughts on that, relationships and how they impact a person's overall health?
Well, for example, there's a study that showed that couples who are in conflict-ridden marriages take longer to heal all physical wounds than happily married couples. So that was from a study published in 2005. And so we heal faster, we are physically healthier when we have good relationships, and having good social contact relationships is also very strongly related to depression or not developing depression. If we have those good relationships, we're much less likely to be depressed than if we don't have strong relations and connections. And
there's a theme coming here. The whole being, the whole person. This theme keeps being reiterated, doesn't it? Yeah. Louise.
So adding to that, this concept of attachment, which is what Kay was talking about, that bonding that takes place between a baby and a mother or another caregiver,
right.
Scientists now know that that is a necessary part of good health throughout the lifespan. So this sense of being securely attached or securely bonded to other people is extremely important. Studies have been conducted in the last decade at MIT using functional magnetic resonance imagery, where people who have been in pain actually have brain changes if a secure, attached individual, someone who they are with whom they are securely attached, is next to them and there is physical proximity and touching. So part of relationship health that contributes to physical health even is healthy affection. And there are four other points. Avoiding criticism. Criticism creates the fight or flight response in the brain. Avoiding defensiveness. Avoiding resentment. And creating and fostering a listening environment, an understanding environment through communication.
Those are great. Thank you for sharing that. Martha, did you have anything on that?
Well, without our relationships, we have nothing, really. Our relationship with God, our relationship with other people, that truly is the key to our underlying happiness, is those relationships.
You brought up the idea of our relationship with a higher being, with Heavenly Father or with others. How about our relationship with ourself? Is that not that we have to have a split personality, obviously, to have a relationship with self, but what about the relationship one has with themselves, if we can put it that way, and how that contributes or detracts from a person's healthy lifestyle?
Well, part of when I think about that, I think about the relationship with ourself has to do with our thinking and our ability to know that we're thinking what we're thinking.
Meaning what?
Meaning that we
metacognating.
We're not just what we think.
Okay.
Our spirit and our individual being is separate from what we're thinking. That's why you can say, you know, you can ask somebody, what are you thinking? They can tell you what you're thinking, and you can actually observe your own thoughts. And when you think about that, that's when you talk about the relationship with yourself. You're talking about seeing, knowing, and understanding what your thought patterns are and what is going on in your head. We're not just a victim to what we're thinking in our head. We can change that. And you know that by the fact that you can think that you know what you're thinking about.
Louise, you were I could just see it in your eyes. You wanted to say something, add on to that?
Kay is more of a CBT or a cognitive behavioral expert than I.
Okay.
But certainly I can say this, that the brain really responds to the two words, I am.
How so? How does the brain respond?
The middle portion of the brain, or the limbic system, is profoundly affected by those words, I am. And if you think about the way we think of ourselves, do we think of ourselves as I am worthy? I am a worthy child of God. I am a person of worth. Think about what even the term I'm stupid. I'm
dumb.
Yes.
I'm ugly.
I'm worthless.
Yeah.
How that affects the brain and our emotions and therefore our body as well. So in that reciprocal nature of mind, body, and spirit, really being aware of our thinking and particularly the way we think about ourselves and our relationship with ourselves and even changing our internal language. That's why I Am a Child of God is such a wonderful hymn, and we all love it because it really speaks. It speaks to that part of our brain that craves to know that we're okay.
I will never hear that song again without thinking that. Thank you. That's great. She referred to you, Kay, in your background on that notion.
Well, cognitive behavioral therapy was developed by a man named Aaron Beck, and it was a brilliant concept. It was the first therapy that had measurable results. And basically what he noticed is when his clients came in and they were depressed or they were anxious, that they were distorting reality in some way. In other words, they were outside of the realm of truth. And he developed a list of what he called cognitive distortions. These are always negative. They're always very, very negative. And the reason I like cognitive behavioral therapy is because he noticed that if we're in truth, the spirit is in truth, and we identify feelings that confirm truth to us. And you don't have to be a member of the church to do that. This man knew nothing about the church, but he recognized that the feelings that were associated with distortions, with untruth, were very, very negative. And the feelings that were associated with true perceptions of ourselves as a child of God, as having hope in the power of the redemption, those things are confirmed by good feelings, feelings of peace, hope, love, enlightenment, joy, as opposed to the other feelings, which is hopelessness, despair, anxiety. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
So by examining our thoughts and bringing ourselves closer to truth, you can change your feeling state. And there's nothing more healing than the spirit.
Again, great counsel. Let's shift gears for just a second. I know. Before we shift then, Josh.
Well, so I just wanted to give a practical example of what people can
okay.
do
Good.
Along these
Good.
Lines.
Because it'll probably lead into my next question, I think.
Well, so there was a study where they had three groups of people, and they had them write down in a journal for 20 minutes every day. And group number one wrote down things they were grateful for. Group number two wrote down things that bothered them or they were upset about. And then group number three wrote down just factual things that were unemotional, like the color okay. of the shoes they wore that day. And after a period of time of doing this, the group that practiced being grateful was not only happier mentally, but they also got sick less over this same period of time. So again, our mental attitude affects our body. But the thing that some people don't realize is that we're not just driven by our thoughts unconsciously, that we can consciously direct the way we want to go. And so it's incredibly important that we actually take time to practice being grateful, and people can simply sit down and write down the things they're grateful for, and that can make a huge difference in their mental and physical health.
I think that, like I said, that probably leads to the next thought. We all know what physical pain is, and I think we all know what emotional or mental pain is. We've all heard people talk about those aches and pains, and almost always they attribute them to mechanical problems or physical problems.
Or aging
or something. Have they got that right or not? Martha, what do you think?
Well, any kind of ache or pain, there's some dis-ease going on. Not that you have a disease, but there is something is not functioning right. So, you know, it can be mechanical, it can be emotional, it can be psychological, it can be spiritual. Pain is a very interesting thing because pain can be, you can be very, very emotionally upset, and it can manifest as strictly physical pain.
Is it vice versa? I mean, physical pain can cause extreme emotional or mental pain?
Yes, and so
anguish.
That's why pain is – I mean, the reason people go to the doctor is because why?
They hurt.
They're in pain
yeah.
of some
yeah.
kind. And so pain is manifested in so many different areas in so many different ways, and it's the big elusive thing. It's like, well, how do we fix this pain? But you truly have to address – all of the issues that's going on with a person, or you'll never get to the root of anything.
That's one of the great things is you as colleagues address that whole person in each of your areas of expertise, which that's admirable.
I have a guy that I'm working with right now that he's just in horrible pain. And it's just this unidentified, he's got a pain here, he's got a pain, he just hurts, he's in so much pain. And I really truly know that his pain is coming from his emotional pain. And it's the only acceptable way for him to express his emotional pain is through his physical body.
Wow. Kay, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thought about pain is that pain is caused by blocks. And you can have blocks in your body, like your heart is blocked, you have a heart attack. But emotional pain is really an attack on agency. Somehow the person has come to believe that they don't have any choice, that there is nothing that they can do. It causes incredible pain. And so I think you address that attack on agency again by bringing people into the realm of truth, using gratitude, helping them to feel the Spirit, see the Lord's hand in their life. And then you can, they're not blocked anymore. They have hope, you know, and
they can
get direction.
You deal with people coming in every day, many, many people coming in because I came in some physical pain. What's your take on aches and pains and what people are experiencing and how perhaps they can get rid of the aches and pains that you see?
Well, first off, we need to understand that pain or any other symptom is the body's warning sign. It's a warning sign that there's a problem. You know, if the smoke alarm went off in your house, you wouldn't put in earplugs so you couldn't hear it. You would figure out where the problem's coming from and try to fix it, right? So your house doesn't
right,
burn down.
Of course.
When we take a drug that dulls our senses so we don't listen to what our body's telling us, then in the long run, there's going to be some consequences to pay for that.
It's like putting in earplugs so I don't hear the smoke alarm.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Now, there's certainly times, obviously, where drugs are appropriate to help us cope with situations, but as a long-term solution to a pain, it's not a solution. It's a cover-up. It's the earplugs, and our body will continue to break down. And so when we get those warning signs, we need to address it to figure out what is going on. And there could be a multitude of different factors that can create physical pain. And oftentimes, again, we'll need to go to a professional to help direct us to hopefully figure out what the cause of the problem is and not just cover up the symptoms. And as we've talked about, if we adopt these healthy lifestyle things, we can avoid lots of problems. But certainly things happen that are outside of our control, like a car accident where we are going to need to go to someone. There's been
right,
a physical trauma. We need some help to get fixed. But I think it's important that we listen to our body, just like we try and listen to the Spirit and be aware of it and in touch and in tune with that, that our body, we need to be the same way, that pain and symptoms are warning signs, and we need to heed those things and not try to cover it up or ignore it.
Let me ask you, Louise, the notion of warning signs, that's a great thing to key off of. Are there emotional or mental warning signs that as people begin to experience to alleviate or to prevent, rather, significant pain, not perhaps, well, maybe even physical pain, that we can recognize as warning signs mentally or emotionally to be a reminder that we need to do something proactively?
Sure. The first one is if there's a problem with ability to sleep, that is a major warning sign that something is happening that is creating a sense of, as Martha puts it, dis-ease. Other warning signs might be increased heart rate, an increased sense of anxiety, or perhaps a lack of pleasure or interest in activities. It could be those. Oftentimes, it is true, pain is a necessary part of life in that it tells us something needs to change. So, and oftentimes, and Kay can probably attest to this, by the time people come to receive counseling, part of the reason is because they are in physical pain, because they have been ignoring it. So what Josh spoke to is very important. When people begin to have that sense that something isn't quite right, it's the mind, body, and spirit all working together to say something needs to change.
And there's nothing wrong with acknowledging that to a healthcare professional. I have a problem.
There's something absolutely right about acknowledging that, because it's just like you talked about at the very beginning. It's taking control of your life and saying, if something needs to change, I'm asking for some assistance.
And so by asking for assistance, I am taking control. It's just so many people need to flip that in their mind that, oh, this shows I'm weak, this shows I'm not in control, this shows I'm a loser or whatever. But I am taking control because now I'm asking someone else who's been trained to help me with that dis-ease, as you put so aptly.
Since we've talked about the fact that we hope to be preventative and provident, if we can notice these warning signs early, oftentimes it's just a little bit of tweaking and we
stitching
can be
stitching time.
Yes, we can be back on track.
Instead of having to go to the hospital,
exactly.
Maybe you could have a drink of water.
Let's talk about basic steps. We have had some great, great discussion ideas. So to those of us that are listening, wherever I am in my life, whether I'm a young person or an older person or an in-between person or whatever my station or situation in life is, what are some basic steps, if you will, overall general steps that anyone could start taking right now to get healthy and stay healthy? Not only physical, but emotional, mental, social. Martha.
So I think there's some basic things. Number one, you get enough sleep.
What is that?
7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Okay.
You need to make sure that you're drinking enough water. So 8 to 10 glasses or half your body weight in ounces per day. Okay. You want to make sure you're eating lots of good fats, fruits, vegetables.
Good fats or fruits and vegetables?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Good
what
fats
are good fats?
Are olives, avocados, fish, nuts, seeds.
Okay.
Those kinds of things.
Occasionally bacon. Can we do that?
Bacon. That would be on the not so good fat list.
Oh, dear. That's another program. Okay.
As with French fries and all the other trans fats.
Let's move on. Oh, no. Okay. Keep going.
Yeah, those are things that we want to think about eliminating.
Right.
And I think when you think about health, things that you can start doing is instead of thinking about what you don't want to do or what you shouldn't do, because as soon as you say, I can't do this or I shouldn't do this, it goes against agency. Mm-hmm. And there's like a little red flag in your subconscious mind that goes, if I say to myself I can't have sugar, then what am I going to want? I'm going to crave sugar.
Right.
Because it goes against agency. And it's true what how you say it to yourself, or if you tell your son, now you don't you ever do that again. What does he want to do? He's going to run out and do it.
Of course.
Because we respond the same way if we tell that to ourselves as if we say it to somebody else. The response is the same. So we want to think about things that we can add to. So if we exercise every day, get enough sleep, eat the right foods, drink enough water. Those are basic things.
Okay. Louise, what are some basic things from your professional outlook?
The importance of good fat can't be stressed enough, and I know that Martha has talked about that. But getting enough fat, getting enough B vitamins, particularly folic acid.
And protein.
And protein can significantly aid in good emotional health and
not just
well-being.
Physical, emotional health we're talking
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Can be, in many respects, as effective as medication in helping with good mental health.
And frequently more effective for some people.
You're thinking on that, Kay. I noticed that you're nodding with Louise is saying.
Oh, yes. Like I said before about sugar, people go for the sugar as a quick fix, other drugs as a quick fix. Really, what you want is exactly what Martha and Louise are saying. You want those good fats. You want the B vitamins, which you're going to get from your whole grains. And so it really is. It's the word of wisdom. It really is. It's interesting how, you know, all those years ago, the Lord gave us this direction, and now all kinds of research is bearing that out.
So maybe the word of wisdom was the first fad diet? I don't know.
Well, if anybody followed it, I don't know.
What's your take on that, Josh, the idea of some basic things that people can be doing to help with their physical, emotional, mental well-being?
Great question. I think we've said it, but to sum it up, I think there's five areas that I look at. Getting enough sleep, around 8 hours for adults, 9 hours for kids or more, the younger they are. Eating good, lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, little meat, just like the Word of Wisdom says. We tend in the church to be really good about avoiding the things the Word of Wisdom says to not do, and that's one of the categories as well. Don't do things you know are harmful. Don't smoke, don't drink alcohol, things like that. But we need to focus on the things the Word of Wisdom says that are good for you to do, which is fruits and vegetables, whole grains, a little bit of meat. And again, studies show that that will lower your risk of developing all the major degenerative diseases there is. Again, exercising, moving. I recommend to my patients at least 30 minutes of exercise at least 3 days a week, but more to a point is better. An hour a day, 6 days a week is fantastic. And for people that can exercise, just moving is good. I've had patients that are not physically able to exercise that I will tell them, when you're sitting on your couch watching TV, I want you tapping your toes for those 30 minutes, or I want you rubbing your hands together for 30 minutes, or waving your arms. Every commercial, yes, anything's better than nothing. And then again, having good relationships, practicing mental health. If we need help, well, it's good to do anyways. But again, being grateful, writing down things you're grateful for is a fantastic start. And so I think that those things are critical. And again, I think we have to have the foundational understanding that health is our responsibility. It's not the government's job, our insurance companies, or our doctor's job to keep us healthy. That the choices we make on a daily basis is by far what determines our health over our lifetime, more than anything else, more than our genes, more than our environment or socioeconomic status, to the things that we choose to do every day. And that the body really is self-regulating and self-healing. If we give it the things it needs to work right, in the first place, the vast majority of the time it works right, we prevent problems. And if we do have a problem, again, we need to look to, what does the body need to heal itself? If we give it those things it needs to heal itself, then again, the majority of the time it does heal itself. As we've said, there are cases where we can be too far gone, where we may not heal. But for the most people, again, if you do the things that create health, you'll stay healthy and regain your health.
Thank you. That was a really good summation. Well, thank you to each of you for sharing your expertise and wisdom concerning how each of us can have a more healthy lifestyle. Today's topic on Provident Living. You've been listening to Provident Living on the Mormon Channel from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. To learn more about this and other programs, visit mormonchannel.org. I'm Val Dawson, and thank you for joining us. Mm-hmm.